hello, let's get started. My name is Gail Matthews DiNatale, and I am a full-time faculty member with Northeastern University's College of Professional Studies. I'm the lead for the e-learning design concentration within the Master of Education program. And so today I'm going to be talking about two things. One is e-portfolios and the role, e-portfolios and the role that they play within our program, but also the process that we went through in designing the program and what some of the implications are for backward design or planning backwards. And we will also loop back around. This project that I'm presenting on was was developed as part of a national consortium called the Connect to Learning Consortium. 24 participating institutions that agreed to document their work via portfolio practice. And I'll get to more on that. So we've got a number of pieces to be working with today, moving parts. And I thought I'd talk for a second about what our structure is. We'll start with kind of a crystal ball exercise to get us going and thinking a little bit after lunch. And then I will go into more of the case study about the designing for connections in our concentration. I'll end up with some national resources along the way. So a little bit of everything today. And the presentation description in the booklet references that you would get a booklet. I'm not doing the booklet in the, for the sake of trees. And also, yeah, I know. The sake of trees, but the booklet is online. So that guiding questions document that you have in the bottom right-hand corner, it says C2L project, Northeastern project, and also the Masters of Education ePortfolio resource site. Those are also at the bottom of my slide, and they're also available online. So I put links to all of those materials in the online session materials. Did I make up for disappointing people?
Yes.
Oh, good. You know, nothing like angering your audience before you've even started. Trust me, we've got over 220 cases online, so it's a pretty. We've got some pretty rich sites there for you. Starting with our exercise, because we've been spending a lot of time talking about connected learning and last year and then this year. So, but that prompted the question for me, if connected learning is our future or is our present, as some would argue, what do learning designers need to be able to do? If they are to participate in a constructive way in helping to shape this future. So if we think in terms of, yes, we're talking about connected learning, but the people that are going to help create that connected learning, if they're being educated, what do they need? Okay. So what would the exemplary e-learning, connected e-learner look like? So take a few minutes, jot down your thoughts. How would you know one if you saw one? The exemplary e-learning designer. So what I thought we'd do is take a few minutes from this group, but also for our colleagues online. I gave a hashtag, and I've also got a Twitter follow up here, which hopefully we'll be able to collect. So if you're online, the hashtag is CLDCC, and if you're here face to face, well, you can tweet or you can speak up. What were some of the things that came up when you were thinking about the future of e-learning design and what those designers need to be able to what would their characteristics be? Oh yeah, it's a CLDCC. Okay, so helping a group figure out how to you said record, access, and archive thoughts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So global awareness, understanding your learner or attentive to your learners. Mm-hmm. Other characteristics, qualities. Your dream person that's going to help you usher in the future. So there's not only the culture and the diversity and the connectedness and the specific needs, but also the differences among the learners in terms of how they access information, what their learning preferences are. Yeah. Efficient. Change the world, but also by 2 o'clock, right? Yeah. Okay, so I paid him, but if you're going to be creating connected learning environments, that you have also experienced connected learning environments, and that whole sense of appreciation that you are able to work within wide groups of people and to be able to perceive connections. Did I do okay there? Yeah? Okay. This is the kind of thing that we could do for hours. In fact, our faculty did do this for hours. I will, however, move us on probably much more quickly than you would if you were working within this. This is modeling the practice of backward design, the idea that you start by thinking about what your ideal person coming out of that learning experience would look like, how they would behave, what they would think, what they would be able to do, and all of those kinds of words added up together create this sort of abstract word that we're referring to as competencies. Sometimes people talk about them as outcomes. I like to think of it more in terms of competencies because that focuses more on the learner. In your handout there, the guiding questions, there's some quick and dirty definitions of the kinds of terms that we bandy about here, the idea of competencies, the idea of a signature assignment, an assignment designed to evidence those competencies, and what an e-portfolio entails. But let's get back to our case study. We took all of the ideas that emerged, and I will tell you that we did interviews with 20 thought leaders. And it was as simple as that, the same question that I just asked you, and actually asking them to sort of back up the food chain, and took hundreds of elements and then started to sift and sort with the tried and true sticky method, the very high-tech sticky method, putting things into groups and then to try to aggregate it up into a cluster of competencies that would be a little bit more manageable, and we would be more holistic and allow us to sort of think across our entire program. So here's what we came up with. As I said, it's our best guess based on a lot of conversations. At the master's level, and so one of the things that we're distinguishing between is what is a Master of Education degree and what is a Master of Education with e-learning design concentration degree. So on the master's level, we were getting to some of the things that you've already pointed out, this idea of being culturally responsive, a systems thinker, a communicator, creative problem solver. With e-learning design, one of the things that was really fascinating to me is if you kept on asking people the question, the first things that people would say would be much more of like learning analytics or some of the things that are topics, BYOD, blended learning, those kinds of things that we've been talking about. But if you think and talk with people longer in terms of, well, what is it that your learning designers are having difficulty with? What is it that it seems your institution needs? All of a sudden, you get into these much larger things about contextual cognizance, and that is some of the things that you were talking about in terms of situational awareness, the people that you're working with, what is the institution that you're working with. If it needs to be done by 2 o'clock, you might do it a little bit more differently than if you know that you have a six-month timeline. That kind of cognizance and also leadership and vision. Now, I don't know about you, but this starts to be really scary to me to think about how can you have a program that results in things like these, because these things like these for me often seem to be, well, aren't they innate? How can we increase somebody's capacity in that regard? And part of this case study is to show you how we've designed this program with those outcomes in mind. Let me back up the train a little bit to tell you about the Master of Education program. And its size, we have about 470 active students. 60%, more than 60% attend part-time, which tells you a lot about the worlds in which they live. Most of them are working. However, when we looked at their portfolios, we realized that they were working, but they maybe weren't working in the area in which they wanted to work. So I think that, you know, as you drill down and get to know your students a little bit better, you may find some surprises there. So we needed to have a program that would manage part-time, would be able to meet the needs of people who are already working in the field of e-learning design and people who wanted to be in the field and weren't yet. So we needed to have a curriculum that would work with that. It was 100% fully online. As I mentioned, there were four concentrations overall within the Master of Education program, so it was one of four, and predominantly female, and about half in-state, half outside. So that's just by the numbers. What we did is when you're thinking about strategic planning for any institution, one of the typical things you go through is a mission and vision statement process. What we decided is that it was very important for us to articulate for ourselves what our sense of mission and vision was for the program. So we worked backwards, actually, from those competencies that I was just showing on the screen to say, okay, this is what we think this person, we would love our ideal graduate to be, but what is the underlying mission and vision that maybe we haven't articulated for ourselves? And so there you start to see some of the other terms that were coming up with your group. Things like values about an equitable, globally connected society. Again, things about leadership, things about intellectual acumen, systemic, to being able to question systemic norms. So in other words, our program is trying to get people to perhaps play an active role in the system for education being different and different in a better way after they've worked with our program. And that's some of what we're trying to equip them with. So then the next question, backing up the train, if we've got the competency, if we've got our mission, we're saying, well, what kind of program design? And this is where it got very interesting and very challenging, is if we're trying to attain those more globally connected types of ways of moving through life and thinking about life, clearly the usual design for a program is not going to do that. So the usual design for a program is a nice title, you know, a collection of courses that loosely kind of maybe add up to something, but not necessarily connected. So what we did was we designed a program that had four distinguishing features, and I'm going to tell you sort of in a very abstract way, and then I'm going to give you some examples. So, for example, we've already talked about the fact that it was we felt the importance to have a mission and competencies, to have that in writing and to have that out for ourselves as our guide star. We felt that it was important in terms of the connections across the program to have some space for things to be reflective. And that's where we get to the e-portfolio component of the program. Also, this idea of that there would be a developing sense of identity and presence, and to think about this idea of both identity and how they articulate and establish their presence, both face-to-face and online. And this idea also that if we wanted them to experience connected learning, we needed to have some kind of cohesive sequence. So we needed to be thinking about not only what our courses were, but how they were happening and in what flow that they would be happening. So before, during, and after, and also in keeping in mind that our programs start, also have a certificate program. So it needed to be able to be stackable and structured. So, and in order to do this, we realized that we needed to have some kind of orientation not only to the program and its curriculum, but to the way that we were thinking about learning. And so what we did was we established a gateway course that's 5 credits. Start the program with a 5-credit course that includes basically an orientation to the program, an orientation to becoming a member of and taking the next step in your membership of within the profession of an educational professional, and also the portfolio pedagogies that would underlie the program. So that cohesive gateway course, and the courses designed in relationship to one another. And finally, this idea of authentic and experiential work. So obviously, to be talking about any of this in the abstract without having experienced it, experiencing creating it, was problematic. In order to do that, what we developed were what we call signature assignments. So each course has an assignment that everybody has agreed that that assignment will always be in that course, and that assignment is to be contributed to the portfolio. So they're building a body of work. And again, this is just an overview. I'm going to show you some examples in a second. But before we get going, we've already talked about the mission and competencies. I wanted to get into this idea of the e-portfolio. And I'll talk a little bit about how it plays out in our program. But first, I wanted to talk about e-portfolios in general. This is about to be published in about a week or so in the AACU's journal Peer Review by Randy Bass, and he's at Georgetown University. E-portfolios are decidedly not the hottest thing in education. I thought that was a quote that I couldn't resist sharing with us at ELI, because we spend so much time talking about sort of what's on the horizon and where the future holds and how we are totally, completely innovating. And that's a little bit provocative, but I think that it's probably one of the more important things to keep in mind for me in terms of staying grounded in my use of technology is, again, back to the backward design of what am I really hoping for my students. And if we can think about that and have that be the driver, then whatever kind of work that we do with technology is both not the hottest thing and also actually really the hottest thing. So stepping back, how many of you have done work with e-portfolios, supported them, been involved? So, okay, we've got a pretty good crowd. Sometimes there are very few people, so I just want to make sure. I've been working with e-portfolios for over a decade now, And even so, I have to remind myself about this whole concept of what an e-portfolio is. Peter Elbow, who's kind of a legend in writing circles, once said, and I'm sure he's quoting somebody, but I don't know who it was he was quoting. He said, we don't necessarily learn from experience. If we did learn from experience, then all old people would be smart. Okay. So he goes on to say, we learn from reflecting on experience. And that is what e-portfolios are designed to do. They are designed to have a purposeful collection, it's not a filing cabinet, of student work. So you're reflecting on experience. You're not just keeping things at the very abstract level. And also this metacognitive, what am I learning? What is this telling me? Where am I going? And then we often get into the, sort of the technology of, this, of e-portfolios, that they are web-based. Actually, you know, portfolios have been around. That whole approach to pedagogy has been around for years. But what happens when you add the E? When you add the E, you've got all of this above, but you've also got something that's web-based, multiple formats and media, links, nonlinear pathways, and the capacity to reach a larger audience. Now, from a technological perspective, these are all software specs. This is what we want the software to be able to do. But I want us to step back for one moment and think about the pedagogical assumptions that are embedded in this functionality. So the assumption that, for example, a student would want to be able to share this work with people who weren't in the classroom. The assumption that the common denominator of the software will not be the course, as in the course management system, but the common denominator will be the student's experience both within the program, and that it will be designed so that the student can continue to keep it after they have graduated. The assumption that there's more than one way of making knowledge and there's more than one way of representing knowledge, therefore we need to have be able to combine media, images and text and video and audio. The assumption that learning is not a linear or directed thing, but that there is value in checking back and forth and up and down and in and out. And the assumption, for those of you who were at the keynote yesterday, of course, we don't know for sure if this is going to affect learning, but best guess is that this kind of repeated interaction with a concept over time, whether it's 30 seconds or 2 hours or 10 years, that repeated sampling. And so therefore, if a student's coursework is all laid out in front of them and they have a chance to revisit, they have a chance to come and go and come and back forth. So there are a lot of very large assumptions about teaching and learning that are embedded in the functionality of ePortfolio software, and all of those assumptions, I would submit to you, are about connected learning. So Randy goes on to say, after saying it's not the hottest thing, to reiterate some of the things that I've already said, that ePortfolios are at their very heart a set of pedagogical practices that are linking learners to learning, curriculum, co-curriculum, outcomes and programs, and international institutional outcomes. So I want to take a step back again to say that Randy's work from the peer review is actually part of a report on a three-year project called Connect to Learning. And Northeastern was a participant in that project. As I mentioned earlier, the case study that I'm presenting to you today was a case that was developed as part of our involvement. 24 institutions agreed for 3 years to take a portfolio process to document their work. So every 6 weeks, the good folks from LaGuardia Community College would send out a set of prompts for us. We would groan and moan like any student and then go to our portfolios and write about our work and then look at each other's work and then give each other feedback and then continue to polish and write up. So as I said, 220 case studies. The site was just released last week or a week and a half ago at AACU. And I think what's interesting to me, this whole idea of connection, it's sort of like connection happens on so many levels. But what Connect to Learning came up with is what they call the Catalyst for Learning model. And I can't go into the details because it's such a rich model, but intersecting aspects of both the learning and also the institution that supports this kind of connected learning. So everything from faculty professional learning, technology, scaling up, outcomes assessment, pedagogy. And if you visit this site, one of the things that's fascinating to me is that they've organized, they are linking into our institutional portfolios and connecting to each sector of the model. So if you want to search for one particular type of program, fine. If you want to search according to the sectors of the model. So I would encourage you to take a look at this, especially since we're thinking about how things are so connected. But I'll give you a couple of data points that, in addition to the qualitative data that they were gathering, they were also gathering some institutional data. And because numbers can oftentimes be persuasive in ways that maybe words can't, although I'm very persuaded by words, let me just show two sectors of evidence. Okay, so if you hop over to LaGuardia Community College's portfolio within the Catalyst model, you'll see they had, I believe it was 2,000 students, so this was a pretty large study. And they looked over time with portfolio intensive courses, what the difference was as compared with comparison courses on the retention, what would be a high pass, which within that context, the community college context, was a C and above, and course completion. And you know, as you look at these numbers, they're pretty compelling when you see, for example, the one that I think is most persuasive to me is you've got almost a 10% increase in students that are actually passing the course. You've got 8% some odd course completion increase. You've got a huge increase, you know, almost 20% in terms of next semester retention. So these are all the major issues and concerns that are on our minds. And somehow there's evidence, correlating evidence, not causative evidence, though, that portfolios can go a long way in helping us solve some of these problems in a formative way. So another one that's very interesting to me, especially from our perspective, because we've taken the time to develop a portfolio program as opposed to a set of portfolio courses, is Tunxus Community College tracked. They knew which courses were portfolio intensive. And so what they did is they pulled the numbers on students who had taken one course that was portfolio intensive, two, three, four courses. And so this is what their numbers look like. As you see also, we've got this huge, we've got a more than 20%, almost 20% rather, increase in the next semester retention rates with students who had three portfolios as opposed to no portfolios. So this is starting to add up to something that I would think, that I believe, is there's something about the connected learning that you get with e-portfolios that is leading to some of the things that we are the wicked problems that we're all trying to figure out. So, but back to us. Back to Northeastern. And our way of using portfolios and our way of designing the program in a way that is designed for connected learning. So I'm going to walk you through the life of the program by way of explaining how we believe the curriculum to be cohesive and how we believe it to be authentic. So, my little metaphor of walking through the woods. You've got the clouds above, which is all the kind of more thinking types of conceptual pieces. You've got the trees, which are more the kind of concrete work. And then below on the ground that supports your passage, you've got a portfolio, but the portfolio takes two different forms, a learning portfolio and a showcase portfolio, because one of the things that we believe to be very important with portfolio work is for students to understand that learning is a journey. And part of that journey means that your first week is not going to be that great, but you save it anyway. And you work on it and work on it and work on it, improving. And it's also a part of knowing when it is time or appropriate to go public with your learning, to get it past the wall. So the learning portfolio, the showcase portfolio, also carefully scaffolded throughout the program. So let's take a look at the foundation courses. I talked about the gateway courses. Within our program, the example is the education as an advanced field of study. And what that course is, it's the 5-credit course that I talked to you about. It's really an enculturation into this idea of becoming the next level of a professional or joining a profession. So this is not the first course in your program. This is actually your first entree into that profession or your next step in advancement within that profession. So the tests are ELI websites, conference proceedings, organizations, getting to know and think about yourself as a member of that community. As I mentioned also, there is the 1-credit that's dedicated to orienting the students to the e-portfolio, and they're working in their portfolios every other week. So in part that's to help them get oriented to the software, but in part that's also instilling this idea of recursive reflection. So it's mentoring them in developing those habits, as it were. Now, the second part of it, actually I had those out of some, the second part of it, about a third of the way through their program, they take a course called Connecting Theory with Practice. And within that Theory with Practice course, they do, I'm going to go back here, they work on their professional learning plan. So they're thinking about, okay, now that I'm looking at the organizations, I'm looking at the job descriptions, I'm looking at things like the Horizon Report toward the future, and I'm also looking at myself, and I'm also within my portfolio, I have the competencies listed for the program. So what I'm starting to do is, instead of taking this checklist of competencies and making sure that I have the right item for each competency put in my little grid, I'm starting to think about which of these competencies map with which of the things that I'm seeing out there map with my hopes, my dreams, my profession, my goals. And so what they're doing is they're creating their own professional learning plan. Out of that, they know that we're going to be looking toward those competencies. But they also know that they get a chance to be able to say, which ones are most important for me now? How can I use the program for whatever topics I pick in with whatever assignments or for whatever work that I do within my workplace that I bring into my portfolio or my course into my portfolio? I'm thinking I'm using that as a guide. So this is a breakout from one of the students saying, I'm at a changing point in my career. I'm now leading a team to move our corporate learning into modalities, online learning modalities. And so because we are guiding him through that point, part of one of the things that he is thinking about and writing about in his portfolio is this idea that he is at a crossroads. So now we get into the theory with practice. And that course, building on that professional learning plan work, they work with either with their employer or with an employer that we help them broker with to be able to say, okay, looking at the theory, looking at the competencies, looking at my plan, and looking at what employers need, going back to the contextual cognizance, what is a major piece of work that I can do? They work with the employer, they work with us, they work with their own work and their portfolios to develop a proposal. So what they graduate from this class with is a proposal. It's not having done the work. It's having done the proposal that has been vetted by the faculty member themselves and the employer. So they're expected to carry that on independently for the last of their program as their independent work. However, because they're portfolio-based, every 6 to 8 weeks, we do the same thing that Connect to Learning did to us. We send them out some of those really horrible prompts like, you know, consider your ethics in the workplace and what have you encountered that has challenged you or whatever. And they write about them in their portfolios, and they tour each other's portfolios as a way of maintaining that dialogue. Now, because this is a fully online program and because it's oriented toward learning design, all of this takes place virtually. So for that reason, we call it virtual experiential learning. Northeastern is known for its co-op program on the undergraduate level, but that is designed for people to be working inside at a workplace. This is designed as a model that can happen pretty much completely online, even online with the employer, should they need. So here's just a quick quote from Mike, who was the one who was doing his professional learning plan. And the big thing that he's saying is he's doing this work for these courses with his projects, and he's turning around, and on Monday, he's implementing it within his workplace. And he's helping his workplace rethink how they approach professional learning within their organization. They have been traditionally the trainer is sending people out for a week or two at a time. They're realizing that they need to completely rethink that model. And yes, he's helping them develop those courses, those blended courses, but he's also helping them completely rethink their model for how learning takes place within his organization. And that is his coursework. That's what he's doing for his course, is helping to reshape his organization. So they're carrying this work out independently, but there are still other pieces that are going on along the scene. And this is the point at which you start to see some of the more kind of content-oriented pieces that you would expect to see in a program that's trying to be forward-thinking, things like open learning. We've got a course on analytics, social media. And also, you noticed a course on design as a collaborative profession. Because what we realized is the number one challenge that instructional designers or learning designers had is they had been taught the methodology, but they didn't have the piece about how to collect and collaborate. So we've got a whole course on it, leadership. And here's an example of some of the kinds of work that they have been doing along the way that would be in their portfolio. So for example, one of the things that I'm having them do is do concept maps of what they think learning is. Put the word learning in the center and draw a map. Have them do some reading. Have them consider if that author was drawing the concept map, what did their concept map look like? Looking at each other's concept maps, going back, redoing the concept maps. You can sort of see this one is an interesting one because it's all spokes, and then you start to see these kind of neural networks. This other one is interesting. She already is working. This person has never been a professional learning designer. This person has. And you can see with the second one, she's starting out with a much richer set of connections. But when she gets to her second one, you see how it explodes and she's going out in terms of her relationships. Those are two different kinds of teaching things that I'm doing. I'm with the second one, I'm helping her facilitate coming up with her whole model for what learning is. With the first one, I'm just helping to really kind of explode her mind in terms of what learning can be. But all of that within the portfolio, tracked over time as a repeated kind of exercise, means that they can have a number of those kinds of samplings of what do I think learning is now, what do I think it is now. And again, the write-up that one of the students says is, I'm looking forward to revisiting it. So that's evidence to me that not only am I future-oriented, but the students are perceiving this portfolio as a future-oriented tool. This is what one of the students, Stephanie, said. She said just briefly that she's sharing her learning in a colorful, creative way. It allows her to bring words to life, and that people can see inside her mind that she spent her life trying to communicate in ways that words have not allowed her to do, and that this finally is a way for her to maybe actually get her ideas out in a way that she feels actually represents who she is. So we get to the capstone, the end course, and this is the course at which they take it from the learning portfolio to the showcase portfolio. And we use a model that was developed by Melissa Peet. That's P-E-E-T, and it's called the Integrative Knowledge Portfolio, IKP. So if you look that up, you should be able to find it. And what that basically does is they've all along in their program put these signature assignments in. They've put the professional learning plan. Every single course has one or two signature assignments. They've got all of this, but it's organized around coursework.
The IKP process within the capstone starts them to thinking about, what are my strengths? Out of all this work, what are my strengths? What is my experience? So their showcase portfolio, as opposed to showcasing their work, it's actually showcasing their strengths, and the work is by way of example. Part of what we think about that is that is a way of interpreting your experience, interpreting what you know how to do, what you've learned how to do, and what that speaks to yourself as a person. Our thought is that that starts to get people to really be thinking about themselves in the abstract way and what their gifts and abilities and capabilities are in relationship to some of these so-called soft skills in a way that you wouldn't if it was, let me show you what project I did for what course. So that's kind of in a nutshell. I wanted to just mention a little bit about what this person said, Tamara said, about what that experience was. And all I did was say, can I use a screenshot from your portfolio? And oh, by the way, what did you think of the portfolio work? Fascinating to me. She says, it was an opportunity to integrate my personality with my education. I could gather my thoughts and memorialize them. And I was just so thinking about this yesterday's presentation, this idea of memorializing learning, something that you can go back and can look at, that is personalized, that is connecting somehow to the way I move through life, reinforcing, reflecting, and it's a place for her to, she said, contain her knowledge that sometimes, honestly, she says, can escape me. So we've talked about the role of the portfolio along the bottom, but just as before I get it, I was going to show some resources, resource sites, but before we go on with that, I just wanted to take a step back and think about connected learning. Now, it's kind of funny because I started out thinking about, well, how portfolios are connective, and now I'm backing up into what are the hallmarks of connected learning? Integrating evidence with reflection, assessment with purpose. So all of these things roll back up to the point of why, what we want people to, the competencies or how we want them to grow, not how we want to know whether or not how they did on a particular assessment. Very, very different thing. As a matter of fact, just a quick aside, one of the things that we do with the portfolios is every 6 to 8 months, we would take the portfolios. Each of the faculty members within the program get 7, 8 portfolios. I look at all of them. We ask them to consider some of the questions that we've been considering today. Look at the portfolios holistically. Look at the students holistically and jot down their thoughts about the strengths, the gaps, the surprises. And then we have our faculty meeting around that discussion about what are we learning about our students. So, again, that's a form of assessment that serves a purpose, and the purpose is really more thinking about the connected learning. Inside and out of school, we've talked about that, personal and professional growth, academic and non-academic audiences and purposes. And, again, the connections are across time, they're across places, and they're across people. So just in closing, a couple of the pieces. Now, I mentioned the Catalyst for Learning site. I really encourage you to go to it, and also mention the ABLE conference site. ABLE is evidence-based learning organization, and their main conference happens in Boston every summer, and it's the largest one in the country, actually, that is focused on e-portfolios. I'll give you this, but actually more important than that is to be able to see sort of how we've presented ourselves. This is our institutional portfolio, just a big shameless plug. You can link to it from the C2L site. So let me see how we're doing on time. I think we've got maybe 1 or 2 minutes for if anybody has questions, comments, criticisms. Threw a lot at it. Yes, in the back with green. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, probably. Sorry, I'll also rephrase.
Actually, I had two questions. You mentioned earlier that the students end up touring each other's portfolios.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, what was the incentive for them? I mean, was it just general curiosity, or does their reflection about the other strategies that people are using end up becoming part of their own reflective process? You know, and what they end up reporting out, the learning piece.
I think that there's a number of pieces. It's understood that while you're in this phase of your learning, that this comes with the territory, that this is part of the commitment. The commitment is not, it's sort of not, this is not this add-on, but that's part of what it means to be in that experiential learning. In the same way that, for example, in dissertation groups, advisors sometimes require their people to attend or connect. The other thing is, the portfolio work is very deeply embedded in a number of the courses. So, you know, with how people learn, there are two or three, four times going in. Like, for example, we're going into the learning plan phase this next week. They're all going to be looking at each other's learning plans. So this whole idea of being able to learn and grow from each other, it's already been practiced a lot in their coursework.
And then if I can answer my follow-up, mm-hmm. next question. I really was interested in how you were saying about how for the faculty meetings the portfolios become the basis for that discussion. Have there been any discussions among your faculty about portfolio models for your own peer reviews of teaching?
Yes. What's fascinating to me is there are a number of the faculty who really would like to have a portfolio-based process for, in particular, for the promotion process. Randy Bass, the person who was saying the e-portfolios aren't very hot, he was one of the first people I've ever known who actually, his tenure dossier was a portfolio, and this was like a decade ago. Within our institutional context, it's a fairly traditional structure. I am going in for a review, and one of the things we've talked about is I will probably do both structures, just to be able to model. I'll do a portfolio approach, but I'll also do the traditional approach because that's what the committee wants. And then, oh, by the way, here's this other. Any other questions? I guess there was one other person on the edge of our time. Well, any other questions? If you have, just send me an email. I'd be happy to share because we've been so blessed to get to be involved with projects like Connect to Learning. So it's our turn to share. Thank you.